Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yes, we have another great show today dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. Specifically, we're going to be dealing with spiritual, now that's a big word there, stewardship of life, because it's important to understand that I'm using these words as I define them, of course. And some of you who have been listening probably have already figured out a bit of what the show's about. Some of you might be scratching your head and saying, what is he talking about? Well, of course, I'll explain that. And I think today's show is going to be interesting because I'm joining together the concept of spiritual, which means the thought of our Creator, which is represented in some standards by how much something is enlightened, as it applies to being the one or those, I could say, who are applying this enlightenment to helping life to do what it is here to do, which is to not just sustain itself, but to grow and become more growth to our Creator. This is what this show is going to be about today. Let me define it a little bit better this way so that we can make sense out of it. And then I'll give some numbers out. So if you want to call in, you can. But let me define it a little bit more so that you understand what today's show is going to be about. And that is that if we can better understand what it is that we are here to do in terms of helping to develop and grow life in ways that enlighten it and become a greater part of our Creator, then we are doing a great service, and we are doing a great deal of what we as souls, when we were in soul consciousness completely, decided we wanted to do. So this is going to be a show that's kind of like, okay, what do we do now that we're here, kind of thing. Now, if you would like to call in any time during the show, you can do so. If you're in the U.S., try 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, 888-815-9756. Give me a call while we're on air, and I would love to hear from you. So anything you would like to say about metaphysics and spirituality or today's subject as well, just call in. Let me go into this subject with some degree of, we'll say, care and making sure that I'm covering it in a way that is understandable to most of you. Because we can get real technical into metaphysics and start defining things in ways that maybe more technically more accurate. If you read Life's Hidden Meaning, you might say, oh boy, this is going to be all about all that stuff we had in chapter blank blank. Well, it isn't really, because I kind of tailor these shows to be more about a listening audience than a reading audience. When someone is listening, they only pick up about 1 in 5 amounts, we'll say 20%, of what they would if they were reading. And you might say, really? Yeah, that's right. If you're reading with intent, it's much easier to understand something than it is for me to be talking over the air as I am, with you not reading anything. There's no visual part of this, which depreciates the amount of ways I can communicate. And so it makes it more difficult to just listen and catch everything I'm saying. I understand that, and I'm trying to make it so that most of you are going to pick up some parts of what I'm saying. I'm hoping. Okay. And if I'm not doing a good enough job of that, then you can email me or you can call even right now. All right, so let's go into how and what, et cetera, is going on in life that is the ways that life could be better in terms of our ability to help it, and ways in which, unfortunately, it may be developing at the present time with difficulties. Now, I'm talking about life. I'm talking about all life. I'm not just talking about human life. I'm not talking about any specific type of animal or plant. And I'm certainly not talking about life beyond human, but in any specific way. this, what I'm talking about, really applies to human and below in terms of kingdoms, because life above human has already completed most of the difficulties and has created within itself the elements that generally contribute to God's growth on a consistent level. But life, particularly on Earth, and this is important to understand, this is, we'll call it sort of ethnocentric to Earth, this is about us, is in a difficult state. It's not been easy almost any time in the history of this planet that life has had, we'll say, a clear and relatively direct way that it could help to develop its creator. And this is the reason why. Most life is embroiled in a condition of there being too many forces in the physical world, that's where we are right now, for it to develop without great stress, without tremendous evolutionary factors of survival of the fittest, and many other factors that deal with evolution that all have, unfortunately, force as the bottom line. And so this puts life into a tenuous circumstance. It makes life a, we'll call it a almost iffy situation in whatever milieu it is found. There are so many things that can tip against life and cause it to either move away from creating more of its creator or to cease to exist in this world in a live state. Now, this is a problem because the solution for it comes from spiritualizing life, and there's only two ways that I'm aware of to do that. That is through the group souls and the individual souls in terms of human beings having, we'll say, the ability to conceive of enough ways for all of the different life forms that they interact with. Each group soul has a specific life form, but all the life forms it interacts with, that adds to God and reduces the forces. Now, at the present time, group souls are not very good at doing this because they don't think very strongly in a place called the mental world. Where they are found in the mental world, they only understand virtue in a very limited way, because it's virtue that as it is applied to what is called the third tier of thinking, which is the kind of virtue that you and I would understand as, well, let's help out someone on a more individual level. Let's be closer to those that we see some commonality to ourselves. That's the third tier of kind of concepts that group souls mostly think in. Most people don't know that. And human souls actually are way above that. Our human souls think in concepts about if this is done, how does it grow more of God in general? How does it affect all types of life? That's how our souls think. So there's a huge difference between the souls that control life below human beings and the souls that are human. Now you might say, but I read in chapter 6 that the souls of human beings eventually are come from aspects of a whole bunch of group souls. That's kind of true, but it's a synthesis and this ability to join together all of the creative aspects and make them, we'll say, independently capable of coming up with new thought that allows human souls to enjoy this capability, where the limitation on group souls is tremendously, you know, it's like this almost very, very narrow way of thought, specifically about the species, be it plant or animal, or even mineral, but then we're getting to a different thing because it's really not, minerals aren't alive yet, but of trying to get that species to become most capable of staying alive. Not so for humans. We are the second way that life can get out of this rat race, out of dealing with the problem of there only being an improvement in the way that you deal with forces, but not get rid of the forces. And that way is through spiritual thought and action. And the interesting thing is it'll take maybe millions of years for group souls to be changed. But we, as human beings, can make remarkable changes, which is about what this show is going to be about. Yeah, I'm really excited about this because I'm kind of leading you down the path to this new understanding. That we can do some things that are so remarkable that they could advance group souls while they at the same time remove most of the forces or much of the forces that's involved in life in general. And this is the exciting thing, that we can do this. How do we do it? Well, first of all, we have heart and crown chakras or centers that give us an awareness of God that is fully conscious if we choose to use them that way. And this makes us markedly different than any animal. I know you watch the Animal Channel, you watch PBS, and they always, and everything else, and they always tell you that we're just an extension of animals, you know. Humans are like, oh, we're just very smart animals. No, we're not. Are you kidding? Open your mind and your eyes and look. I love animals. I love all life. But the point, well, I love most life. I have trouble with mosquitoes and certain other things. I'm not really fond of them, but they can be changed. They can be helped. But at any rate, getting back to the more serious side of this, we can do this because we have sense of our own creator, and animals don't. And we can choose to use that sense to help grow life that does the same over time. And we can remove most of the forces in life and therefore make life, by nature, more spiritual. Now, am I talking about breeding? Am I talking about genetic changes? And am I talking about all kinds of things that we are on the verge of or have already been doing? Yeah, sure. But I'm not talking about these things wantonly being used without discrimination, because if we use them for selfish purposes, they're more destructive than if we do nothing. Whereas if we use them with what we'll be talking about in today's show, they become amazingly effective, along with just generally stopping the destruction of life that we have done for eons, since humans have been here, because we just haven't cared about it. At least not in a general sense. Maybe we care about a certain pet, or we care about certain types of animals. We just happen to like that kind. But what we haven't done is said, as a human race, say, all life is extremely important. All life is a critical element because it is the way that the creator of our universe has decided to grow itself. And this is really the bottom line. Once we recognize that, we can then take, we'll say, steps to change our overall methodology and move in a direction that will greatly change our whole world. Nothing will change it more. And interestingly, changing all life changes us better and faster than just trying to change ourselves alone, no matter how hard we try, because we're all interconnected. And if we don't see that all life is part of the growth of God or our Creator, then no matter how hard we try to improve our interrelationship between ourselves, or intra-relationship, I guess if we're comparing it to other kingdoms, between ourselves, it will not have much of an effect. It will not have much of an improvement on who we are. And it won't be lasting. An interesting conundrum in itself about human beings. Because so many human beings think that they can change the nature of who they are by just the relationships between human beings alone. And I'm saying, I don't think that will work. And that's what I hope by the end of today's show, many people are going to be saying the same thing. Okay. Now, what are some of the dynamics? I will add a little flavor, a little spice of metaphysics in here, but I don't want to get too complicated because, again, this doesn't have to be complicated. It can be relatively straightforward. But I do want you to know that life itself has three parts of the Creator or God in its own mind as the components to what creates life itself. And life itself not only is helped by these three parts of the Creator's mind to become alive, but it must do something else besides, and that is it must be self-created. In other words, the Creator didn't choose to create all life. It chose to give to life the building blocks that if life so chooses, can then self-create beyond what the Creator gave. It does this because it doesn't want life to become a puppet show. It wants life to be free to choose, life to be developmentally creative, and it wants life to eventually find its own creator on its own, not to be forced into the process. And the only way to do this is the separation of its own mind, which it does, and then allow these building blocks to be incorporated in a myriad, vast numbers of life, way beyond our comprehension because it goes way beyond our planet. There are trillions of planets in our galaxy. In the whole universe, it's beyond all comprehension how many planets there are. And so it's an incredibly large number that we are dealing with, very, very sizable number of life forms that exist throughout our universe. And I'm talking about the universe as what we see and beyond, because there is the physical dimension that we're in right now, but there's six other dimensions which also contain life. So now we're talking about a huge, huge universe that is way beyond anything we can imagine. Okay, so then what does this mean in terms of life forms? Well, they need to incorporate these three parts of God's mind. I'm going to name them for you. The first part and the second part make up spirit and God's thought, both. Spirit is just another name for the thought of God when it is hanging around anything that is creating life. Well, that's what spirit is. And so the interesting thing about this is these first two parts are very critical because it's the thinking apparatus of the nature of God. And this thinking apparatus has two parts to it, and that is the first part is purpose, creativity, freedom, sacrifice. These are all words that apply to the first part of what thought is. Choices. Will, which is a consistency of choices. All of these first parts have to be present in order for there to be something alive. The second part has to be inclusiveness and love. Givingness, some form of planning, we'll call it the ability to give in an appropriate way, not just giving in any old way, and the ability to direct the other elements that are in the first part, the choices, as an example. And that affects the whole element of the field that life exists in by life doing these two things. This thought has an effect on the field. And it usually affects first the body and senses of the organism itself within its field, because that's the smallest field that it can touch, which is its own bodies, assuming it has bodies. And then it expands out when you add a third part of the Creator's mind, which is, interestingly, activity that communicates well enough with other activity of other life to create some level of what is called intelligence, or the ability to bring the two lives in some ways closer together and to help each of the two lives, or greater, to grow more. So we can see now that growth is a real critical factor, because the third part of God's meaning demands that if an activity is going to be intelligent, it has to support this idea of growing more of life that continues the process of growing more of life. You can grow some parts of life at the cost of many others, but that doesn't continue the process of growing more of life in the long run. You see what I'm saying? So it doesn't do it for all the parts of life that are happening. And that's what God's thought does. Now, can you ignore God's thought and you have non-spiritual thought coming together that produces non-spiritual interactions that produce more distance between life and that lowers one life form at the cost of others? Yeah, it's called evolution. And it's called forces, and it produces a very negative result over long periods of time. And you might say, well, I thought evolution is good because the survival of the fittest, you get better and better at this or that. Well, yeah, but it's at the cost of other life. And over time, it may take millions and even billions of years, a planet that is only evolutionary loses all of its life. It's a null situation. You end up with nothing at the end of the process unless you develop spiritual life. Now, evolution is needed at the beginning of many planets because there isn't enough spirit, especially in the physical realm. Spirit is very limited. The amount of God's thought in the physical realm is very limited. And so evolution is it does develop life. It does grow life for a while, but eventually will cancel itself out because of the forces that are incurred from it. And eventually you end up with fewer and fewer life forms instead of more and more diversity. You have fewer and fewer life forms because the bigger, greater, stronger, brighter, whatever it is, creatures end up destroying all the other ones over time. And the results are you end up with an eventual narrowing of the collective field, and the narrower the field, the more life becomes tenuous and eventually dies out. You may not know that, but I'm telling you why it's happening, why it does happen. But it just takes a long time for this to take place. Now, on planets like Earth, there are plans by great beings beyond human to stop this from taking place. So they have natural catastrophes that wipes out dominant life forms and allows new life forms to come into play, and then the whole system starts over again. And so after a while, you have a safety to the situation. But if you keep knocking out almost all the life forms to stop one from becoming too dominant over others, then you don't really get ahead. All you're doing is protecting the system so it can eventually be helped by becoming spiritual. And that's happened on Earth so many times. It's a lot of times it's taken place. Now, that was usually before humans here, too. Once humans arrive on the scene, since we are the most capable of making life spiritual, we're the most capable of doing this, even beyond the group souls, we can do amazing things. But it becomes incumbent upon us to preserve our own life, that we spiritualize all life. Now, you may not have heard that before, but I'm telling it to you now. And by the end of the show, I hope I will have convinced you that what I'm saying is accurate. Wow. Okay. Now, if this is true, then today's show is extremely important because it expands the whole conversation about what it means to live spiritually. It expands everything about what we talk about on the show because there's a bigger principle at play, and we better become aware of it, because no matter how well humans, quote-unquote, improve their consciousness, if they aren't conscious enough to see this other principle that they have to work for all life, the thing can go down the tubes. Yeah, it can. And we're getting close to the prefaces of that particular incident occurring on a mini scale in the next few years. So we have to be extremely careful right now, because it's kind of like a test. And are we actually going to be able to survive this? Well, I hope so. But it really has to do with not about so much what we do among ourselves, as much as we expand the whole viewpoint, what are we going to do for the whole world of life? And recognize that this life is really part of God. And it's not like, oh, gee, it's our world, we'll do what we want with it. No, it's not our world. We're co-creating, but it's not our world. It's the world of God. And do we want to create more of that God, or do we want to see the world eventually be destroyed? Not necessarily by God, but by our own stupidity, and we'll say the general concepts that God had in generally thinking about how life is going to be, that poses before us this great conundrum, this great difficulty that can, in the long run, end our own lives because we're not paying attention to it. Very important stuff. Okay, so the three parts of the Creator's mind need to be balanced within the life form and need to apply to the life form in every single case. If we're talking about enlightenment or spiritualizing the life form, so that the life form is mostly, but maybe not 100%, contributing to other life and not interfering with and destroying other lives. And this is our job. When did it become our job? Probably in the last 50 to 100 years, and certainly since 1975. Well, you might say, well, how do you have it pinned down so tight? I mean, 1975, what the heck happened in 1975? You know, well, what really happened is that we advanced our abilities to the point that we have we have more control over the mineral kingdom and over the other two lower kingdoms, plants and animals, then we don't. In other words, most of it came over the mineral kingdom. So we have a vast amount of control of the mineral kingdom. We have a little less than half the control over the plant kingdom, but the mineral kingdom makes up for the difference. And we have relatively little control over animals right now, but we're getting very quickly much more since 1975. But in 1975, if you average the whole thing out, we are just about at the 50% point, and we've grown since then. Through our technology, through our knowledge, and somewhat through our consciousness or understanding. This growth has made it incumbent upon us, because of ability, we have to become responsible to the ability, we have to have responsibility. And it is maybe subconscious, you could say, well, nobody signed up for this, but how come it's doing this? And it is, and that's just the way it is. Anyway, when we come back from break, I want to talk a lot more about this and tell you what we can do in a very pragmatic sense to be great stewards in a spiritual way to life in this world. And we will be back in, give or take, a couple of minutes.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Very interesting. We were just talking about how many people are connecting on or not connecting on at a certain moment during the show. It's very interesting. Right before we come back from commercial, more people come back on. I guess people leave their computers or whatever they're doing and then jump back on when the commercial's over. I do the same thing on TV. I channel surf all the time. So it's interesting to watch that actually taking place while I'm speaking. Well, it's better than the other way, that they rather, you know, I guess people would tune me out and just listen to the commercial. It'd be kind of strange. Okay, so then I hope that I'm not losing you about this these concepts about how life works, because, I don't want to get complicated. I want to keep this relatively simple. Then how is it that we can... In using simple English, without getting too technical on the science side, how can we make life more spiritual and drive out some of the forces that are going on? Well, here's an interesting point. If you happen to be very scientifically, you know, inclined, and if you're involved in, say, genetic engineering, et cetera, you could be on that fringe that is actually doing this on a, we'll call it more intellectual level. That's great. For those of you who would like more information about this subject, you can email me or call me, because I don't want to go in depth about what you can be doing, because it's too technical. And I know you know, or it will dawn on you maybe, or if you haven't thought of it, of a lot of things that you could be doing. But I want to be more general for our general audience of listeners, and so cover that first. And if there's some time, I may go into more of the specifics about some of these more, we'll call them technical areas that can be done. But the first thing that comes to mind to me is to recognize, you know, it's sort of like the Hippocrates viewpoint, do no harm. Okay. And I think that we need to stop harming life before we can really appreciate how we can spiritualize and help life. Now, I don't want to go through an itinerary of all the things that humans do to destroy life or harm it, but this is more about the general conditions. And in general, things that that help life are areas of conservation and areas of non-pollution. So we have to be concerned about not polluting and conserving energy, a conserving form that we may not see as energy, like, you know, even a styrofoam cup or something. You need to conserve energy because there's a lot of energy in that cup, and you also don't want to use the form in a way which is destructive to the environment, such as throwing it in the water or whatever, and you know, it becoming a problem for some type of animal species, etc., or fish. So if we look at this whole process, the first thing we need to do is to reduce the levels of pollution in the world. And these days now it includes, unfortunately for most of us, a very dreadful problem of producing too much carbon dioxide. Plants need carbon dioxide. That's the good news. The the bad news is we're destroying the plants that need it while we're also increasing the amount of carbon dioxide at frighteningly high levels. And so we need to decrease that. Now, it isn't just carbon dioxide. There's also carbon monoxide. There's a thing called methane. It's just like the natural gas. So if you have a gas stove, methane is like 22 times more likely to create greenhouse effects. That means heating up our atmosphere and making the planet hotter. As we change the temperature and skew it towards a hotter world, we put stress on all life, including our own. And we are destroying many environments that life grows in and making the world almost into one type of environment. If you've ever saw the movie Waterworld or read the book, that's what we're moving towards. Yeah, it's going to be a world where there won't be much land around and a lot of water. Well, if you do that, and especially when the water is heated up, it carries less oxygen, which means it can, most types of life needs oxygen that lives in the ocean. And the few types of life that don't, we're not going to really be that tickled about. Like, I don't think we want a zillion giant jellyfish running around. They need much less oxygen. And I don't think we want certain type of anaerobic bacteria running around because they produce some negative effects in the oceans as well. So we are creating an environment that is not conducive towards life in general. Much less are we producing any spiritualization of life through this process. What about conservation? Well, as we use less energy, we will be polluting less with both CO2 and many other things. And at the same time, we will be needing to take much less from the animal and plant kingdom. Now, as it turns out, we actually take that not as so much right now from the animal kingdom as we could, but where we're taking the most from the animal kingdom is by eating them. Now, I know a lot of you are going to say, oh, well, that guy's a vegetarian, so he's just saying it. Well, okay, full disclosure, I'm a vegetarian, all right? I'm not vegan, okay? I'm not into that far over, but for those of you who are, terrific. That's great. But I eat nothing that ever had a face on it, but I also will eat eggs or milk, because, and especially eggs that are not, have never been fertilized. That sounds strange, because there was never any life in that. And for those of you who say, but it could become alive, yeah, I know that argument, but there's a different way of looking at the thing. And then the animals that produce those, I prefer to deal with places that sell milk from cows and are relatively free and taken care of better, and especially chickens, that's also true, free range and all that business. Now, there's a lot of arguments about the whole issue, and I don't want to get into them right now, but I'm just saying if we all became some level of vegetarian, that would help to improve the world, because at a strictly, idea about life not even spiritualizing yet, if we keep producing more and more cattle and more pigs and everything else and then slaughtering them, those animals cannot advance, and they are somewhat harming the planet because they're imbalancing our world. It's too much of a certain kind of animal life that isn't really helping even evolve itself, much less anything else. And it's producing, in the case of cattle, a lot of wasted energy to grow them, and they produce a lot of methane. There's a lot of problems in that, believe me. So we need to be looking at how to change this equation without necessarily giving up everything. But I am suggesting that everybody consider some form of vegetarianism if they can, do so without making themselves ill, because vegetarianism, even in the more modified aspects of it, requires a much more conscious person to stay healthy, because you tend to not get the right mix of amino acids, it's proteins, and there's a lot of other types of nutrients that may be lacking in the diet. So it's important that people understand all that, and that's consciousness. All right. So those are some basic elements that we can make some changes in if we wanted to. Now, what about the spiritual side? The spiritual side isn't just about not harming. It also means that you've got to find some way of enlightening life. So how can we enlighten life? Well, the first thing is to look at every species around us that we're familiar with or we can become familiar with and ask ourselves, how can we help this species of life to grow without detracting from life around it? And this is a complicated equation. It's very difficult to do because there's so much of life that right now is fighting among itself and dealing with things through forces. So we have to find ways of evolving life in a more spiritually enlightened way so it doesn't do this. And this may even involve genetic engineering. As an example, if you don't care for fire ants, and I'm not in love with these things, as I wrote in Life's Hidden Meaning, I think that it would be appropriate to reduce their ability to sting so violently and to, at the same time, allow them to have other attributes that allows them to live without having to have this very forceful attribute, which we don't care for ourselves, and that displaces a bunch of other life so that they become the dominant form of, we'll call it, ground kind of life that exists in the areas they exist in, which is very destructive to the environment, by the way. There's much reduction in overall life when you have something as forceful as a fire ant living around you. In some parts of the country, if you live there, you know what I'm talking about. It's devastating what they can do. So this is an important element. We can change them through genetic engineering. Yeah, and we have the technology, actually, today. I don't know why it hasn't been applied. Maybe some people are afraid of it. So there's a lot of people who say, well, we have to be natural. We just have to leave nature alone and let it do what it wants. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying we're here to change nature because we're already doing it, whether we like it or not. So we better start doing it in ways that are more spiritual. Now, this is a very complicated thing because if you're going to change even fire ants, you better look at the overall ramifications of how it's going to affect all life and not just fire ants and how it's going to affect fire ants as well. So you don't want to destroy all fire ants, but you do want to reduce life that is being destructive to life from doing that. So you're going to have to change the way fire ants function. Okay, and then let's take a look at another very difficult life form for some people is mosquitoes. Well, mosquitoes are eaten by lots of things, so can be an important nutritional source for some frogs and, you know, amphibians and many fish and that sort of thing, but especially the larvae. But I think it's important to recognize that mosquitoes also are extremely destructive to life because they carry certain diseases that are very, very difficult, especially for human beings to deal with. So I think at this point it's best for us to, again, find ways of re-engineering mosquitoes. And again, we're talking about a relatively difficult process. The first thing we may need to do is to limit the total number of mosquitoes in some areas, while we find better solutions for how to deal with them. Make it so that some of the more nasty diseases that they carry can't, in one way or another, find lodging within the mosquito. That's possible to do. And it's very important to deal with microbial life, which we are by trying to make antibiotics, etc., but that are destructive, pathogenic. But at the same time, not hybrid them. Not be wasteful and silly about how we create a system. And that's why we need to look at how, by changing the pathogens and changing the relative relationship of pathogens to carriers, etc., that we can make even pathogens become more positive and helpful. And instead of being pathogens, maybe becoming synergistically capable of benefiting all kinds of different life forms rather than becoming destructive to life forms. This is possible to do. Many people are concerned about bird flu. We have a product which was designed originally to try to combat bird flu. I think it's important to understand, though, that when you're dealing with things like viruses, viruses are virtually the crossover between life and non-life. And what we need to do is to actually elevate a virus to a little different status and to get it to the point where it doesn't have to rely upon the, we'll say, Shanghaiing of cells and taking them over to produce more viruses as its only means of replication. And we can do this without making a dangerous virus, but by actually mitigating the danger of viruses. We can do this not just through science, we actually could do this in the way that we transmit among ourselves viruses and using more natural substances besides just trying to use various types of vaccines and antivirals, that would be even more effective in terms of helping the virus to become something other than just a pathogen and helping ourselves to get well faster. I actually have a whole science I developed that does exactly what I just said, but it's too complicated tonight to talk about it. But the amazing thing is we can even get down to the level of viruses in helping to spiritualize that. It's called a sub-kingdom, because virus is not really part of any kingdom. It's a part of life that is so early in development, it actually got trapped in between kingdoms, and it doesn't yet know how to advance itself to become a plant, we'll say, or an animal. Some viruses could actually enter to a very low form of animal, or they could enter into becoming a very primitive form of plant. Most of those are feeding on either plants or animals, interestingly enough. So the thing that viruses and other types of pathogenic bacteria feed on, and some fungi as well, are the, unfortunately, the species that they have the most in common with and could evolve into something similar to that species themselves if they were brought to a higher level of development. Now, if this sounds like, whoa, this is way out there, it kind of is. But what we're talking about tonight is how can we really make a difference in terms of spiritualizing our planet. Now, you know what? I'm looking at the clock. I'm not even going to get very far into plants or animals today. I don't know. Well, you know what I have the luxury of doing? I can make this show go on next week, and we can talk about the same subject some more if I would like to, and I think it might be interesting to do that. Okay, but let me continue. I do have a couple more minutes left, so I'll continue on with my ideas here. All right, so if we're going to spiritualize, we have to look for ways that we can enlighten the life that is around us. We live in a world that is extremely contentious, and the forces are very high. So we have to do this in a careful manner, and we need to pick things that we can do something about at the time. Each of us, forgetting about all the science stuff, which I did get kind of off onto, each of us can look around us and see many, many, many forms of life. Some of them are our pets. Some of them are the animals we're eating. Some of them are animals that live wild around us that we can do something about to make them a greater positive part of the environment around us. Pigeons. I like to think about pigeons sometimes. Pigeons poop a lot, and they carry certain types of diseases that may affect our lungs and other things. But the interesting thing is that they also eat a lot of insects, and they do a lot of other stuff. So how about making pigeons that are disease-free, that are somewhat self-limiting in terms of how many there are going to be of pigeons within a square mile, we'll say, or whatever. In our area, we actually have some pigeon people that are running around relocating pigeons. They relocate those that are too densely populated to less dense populated areas. Isn't that interesting? I think that's fascinating. Now, again, to make pigeons less vulnerable to disease, we can actually feed them certain types of herbs and foods that will allow them to supplement their diet. I don't want to I don't want to replace their diet because I want them to continue to eat bugs and things. It's good for them to eat that. But to supplement it, just a small amount would probably hold off some of the diseases that they poop out that cause us to have infections and things. And also, we can use them in many more productive ways. Pigeons are really interesting creatures. They have a whole set of characteristics that we could use to help in limiting the mosquito population and reducing a number of other issues that are bothering us. We could train them. You don't have to train them in terms of making them all tame and like our friends and putting them in coops. I don't want to do that. I want to train them in mass on a scale of being wild animals and giving them some more abilities by us allowing them to have habitat that is strictly for their own sake, that gives them the opportunity to do some good for us. And we move them in that direction by providing opportunities that they will take, if we're smart, and that leads them to becoming more helpful than hurtful in the things that we do. We don't even think about that, I know. And for those of you who live in areas where there's squirrels, the same kind of thing applies, actually. So every part of life, that's an animal. I wanted to, and I'll talk a little bit about plants real quickly here. Weeds. What about weeds? Aren't weeds kind of a nasty thing? They make all this pollen and other things sometimes, and they push out other plants. Most of us kill weeds. But, you know, the interesting thing about weeds is they tend to grow where there is an imbalance in the soil and the conditions for more effective forms of plant life to live. By increasing the beneficial elements of the soil and the conditions for other kinds of plant life, weeds are tremendously reduced. You may not have known that. And you don't have to go out there with your poison and just kill them if you just improve the conditions for the other plants. And that's why, you know, in really healthy lawns, you don't see very many weeds, because the lawn itself is enjoying its own growth factor, and it can handle the weeds. So we're not balancing life enough if we have a very weedy situation, and we need to pay more attention to that element of balance. You know what? I'm out of time for right now, but I want to continue the show because there's a lot more to talk about, and so I'm going to do so next week. For those of you who are in the northeastern part of the United States, you can listen to the Sunday show of me talking about the first part of the lost continent of Atlantis, and you can do so by tuning into 1170 AM, or any place in the world, if you just tune into WDISAM.com, you can hear the same show. It's on from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, or GMT minus 7, or 4 to 5 p.m. in Eastern Daylight Time. And so tune into that show and listen this Sunday, because you get to hear me a second time. And then, if you're in the metropolitan Phoenix area and you're in the Glendale part of Phoenix, you can come over to Borders on Bell Road at 7320 West Bell Road, and you can hear me, one of the people who's a member of a spiritual group I am a member of as well, talking about creating virtue, which is an interesting subject, and that's what she's going to be discussing and talking about. So come between 7 p.m. and 8:15. Hopefully you'll get there at 7 so you can listen to the whole talk and participate. We'd love for you to come to that. And, again, next week we will continue this discussion of how to spiritualize life. And I hope you'll think about it and give me a call if next week on the show. You can do that, or you can write me at thoughts@whylifeis.com if you don't want to talk on air but would like to email me, so you have that opportunity. Well, until next week, this has been you-know-who, Miles McFlower, and we will continue our discussion about how to create more spiritual life in our world and be great stewards of this life, and how it's, and I want to continue also next week about how this is going to improve our life, because I wasn't able to connect all the dots today. So believe me, it's going to be just as important to talk about and listen to next week's show. Okay, until then, this has been Niles McFlower, again for Wildlife Is, and I'll be at you next week.